Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey clones, what's cracking? Welcome to the Daily Jungle. One more show until Friday's Year in Review, and then it's off until 2018 when the TV show takes off on CBS Sports Network. I open the show with Florida Atlantic and Lane Kiffin. And it was not to clown him. I also had a stack of takes that I would have gotten to, but then Ruben Richmond called and told a story about Parody Larry, and then all hell broke loose, including a call from P. Larry himself that I had to hammer the dump button on. Jerick McKinnon of the NFC North champion Minnesota Vikings came in. Milwaukee Bucks head coach Jason Kidd was back in the jungle. TCU basketball coach Jamie Dixon closed the show. In fact, I gave you about 10 hours worth of content in just 3 hours. It was that much show. So, Alvy, go ahead and roll it, because the Daily Jungle starts right now. Let me start right here, though. And it's a place where I never thought that I would start. I never thought that I would start this show like this, ever. FAU 50, Akron 3. And what I mean by that is, I never thought that I'd be starting this show by talking about Florida Atlantic University. Just like I never thought that I would open this show by talking Lane Kiffin. Well, actually, that's not true. I never thought that I would open the show with a positive Lane Kiffin take. But here we are. Here we freaking are. Alvy, come on, man. Oh, thanks, Alvy. Good looking out, Alvy. That's one for you, Alvy. Hey, look, we're still ironing out the kinks, right? I started yesterday's program by telling everybody how great it was to be here on a Wednesday. At least I got the day right. Anyway, we are talking about Lane Kiffin. And to start the show with a take on Lane Kiffin is pretty unusual. Again, it's not. A positive take, though, is. And the reason I'm doing this, the Owls won the Boca Bowl championship, and Lane Kiffin is winning everything. Look at this guy. He's got a contract on the table that's going to keep him there for 10 years. 10 years. A 10-game winning streak. An 11-win season. A bowl game trophy, and a post-game dance party in his locker room. Oh, and he's got a place on the water, and a boat, and a couple of jet skis. This dude is stacking so many championships of life, Butch Jones is getting jealous. And then after that beatdown was over, Kiffy explained what the extension meant to him.
It was a neat day because, you know, it was just the university saying, you know, we're excited about what's going on, believe in what you're doing, you know. We don't mind it. You make jokes on Twitter like other people do. And it was just neat to see.
All right, then. What else does that new contract mean to Lane? Quote, I won't get fired on any tarmacs. End quote. Hey-o! What a freaking year. What a freaking year. Remember, it was less than a year ago this same guy was gassed by Nick Saban a week before the national title game. And yet, less than a year later, he's now hanging 50 on teams, dropping double-digit win seasons and tarmac jokes. And the guy did. Put up a ton of points last night. Listen, my man, he is not here to make friends. He's not looking to make friends and influence people. He went for it on fourth down 6 times, converting 5 times. He scored 3 touchdowns on those fourth downs. Same guy called a halfback pass up by 47 in the fourth quarter. He was still throwing the ball with 11 seconds left in the game. I mean, clearly, Kiffy gonna kiff. It's incredible. Almost as incredible as Kiffin going for 2 when the Owls scored to make it 34-3 in the third quarter. I mean, exactly what was that all about? Why are you doing something like that? He said, quote, that was their assistant athletic director. He talked yesterday at the luncheon, talked trash, so his bad. End quote. Boom! Take that, assistant AD at Akron, whoever the hell you are. You just got kiffined. This guy's the best. He's not just bringing back Florida Atlantic football. He's bringing back action movie one-liners. His bad, quote unquote, his bad is right up there with hasta la vista, baby, and pain don't hurt for all-time badass lines.
Do you enjoy pain?
Pain don't hurt.
Pain don't hurt. Here's the only issue I'm having. Here's the problem I'm having. What do we do with the guy now? What do we do with Lane Kiffin right now? Are we supposed to crack this guy the way we always have? Or do we love this guy now? I mean, for years, he's been the bag. The guy who jumped or was pushed from one job to another over and over again. The guy who was deflating footballs. The guy who was switching jerseys. But is it possible that he's done the opposite? The opposite of turning heel. That now he's the anti-bag. That this dude is actually cool now. Is it possible that Kiff is the hero that we all need? He's obviously the hero that FAU needs, which is why they're looking to keep this guy around for another decade. Look, I've got no idea if he'll stay there more than 1 year, much less 10. But if I were FAU, I'd do the exact same thing. They will never have it better than they do right now. I mean, the jokes, the tweets, the trolling of Nick Saban. So go ahead and kill this guy for being the same bag that he ever was. Just don't tell me that you're not entertained by this guy. He's done the impossible. Not only are they winning at FAU, it's how they're winning. By annihilating chumps and then talking junk about what they just did to them. Call this dude a circus, but it's a circus that works. For all the cracks about how this guy kept falling forward and failing up, he's not failing at FAU. Hell, I'll give you an example really quickly. He got me to play this on my show.
We're gonna fight, fight, fight for FAU. We know we're gonna win, and it's feeling mighty nice. Cheering our football team down the field. We're wearing our colors too. Whoop, whoop, whoop. The mighty Niles are on the ground. Go FAU.
And so what's that? What is that? That's players singing the FAU fight song in the locker room after the win. I didn't even know FAU had a fight song. And now I can't get that jam out of my head. That's the hottest jam there is. How many other schools have fight songs that include the lines, "There's football in paradise, and we know we're going to win, and it's feeling mighty nice"? How many other schools? None. None. But the Owls do know they're going to win, and it is feeling mighty nice. And it's never felt this nice at FAU. Not until this guy came along. So very quickly, three straight, three-win seasons before he arrived, and then started this year 1-3, and then they ripped off 10 straight. Now, is anything ever going to top that 76-yard field goal attempt that he had Seabass line up? No, nothing will ever top that. But what this guy's doing at FAU is pretty damn impressive. Right now, it's Lane Kiffin's world, and the rest of us are simply living in it and watching the master work. I'd say coach him up, Lane, but you already did. You already freaking did. The Lane train is rolling. And while it could be 10 years or it could be 10 minutes, it's already been a hell of a run in Boca. So at the end of this long rant, my only question is this. How do you feel about the guy right now? Is he still an all-time bag, or is the guy a legend? Bag or stud? A guy you'll always hate no matter what, or a dude who finally figured it all out, and a guy maybe you want to slam a few beers with? In short, do you trust this guy? Has he changed, or do dudes like that never, ever change? 1-800-636-8686. Kiff, you did it. Not only did you put FAU on the map, you just carved out some unbelievable beachfront real estate here in the jungle. Right off the top, an entire rant on FAU football. Jerick McKinnon is my guest. Jerick, it's great to have you on today. How are you?
I'm doing good. I appreciate y'all for having me.
Man, it's great to have you. Thanks for doing it. Let me ask you about Sunday. You became the first Vikings running back since 2004 to have more than 100 receiving yards in a game. Before we get to the game itself, can you take me back to before the game, knowing the game plan and your abilities, did you know you were going to get loose and have a big day?
You know, you can never be sure, you know, what kind of day you're going to have. You just have to be, you know, prepared and, you know, just go through your keys and then, you know, if you do get a lot of, you know, touches or targets, you know, just make the most out of the opportunity given to you.
All right, so you got the opportunity and you got the touches, and then you're out there and you're making one play after another, one reception after another. Was there any part of you thinking, like, are you guys going to make any adjustments? Are you going to do anything differently to try to stop me at some point?
After the first catch, I figured they would probably be onto it. But, you know, as the game went along, I was able to just keep doing what I was able to do. Case was able to find me, you know, put the ball right on me, made it easy for me, and, you know, was able to make some explosive plays for the offense.
And, of course, Case is Case Keenum. He's been so impressive since he took over as a starting quarterback earlier this season. I mean, what have you made of how he stepped into that role and really just owned it outright?
Man, just, you know, just a lot of respect, you know, just watching him work behind the scenes, you know, how much time he puts in, watching film. You know, how he practices, you know, and things like that, the energy he brings on a consistent day-to-day basis. I have the most respect for that guy right there. You know, obviously, you know, coming in and making the most out of his situation as well.
Clones, let me get at you about Stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't. That's Stamps.com, one of my favorite products ever. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Jerick McKinnon joining us. Then in the fourth quarter, Teddy Bridgewater entered the game and got a huge, huge roar from the crowd. Knowing everything that he's been through since he got hurt, what kind of emotions did you even feel when Teddy stepped back onto the field for the first time?
Man, I was so happy to see him back out there. And, it was fortunate to be out there at the same time. It felt good to have him back out there, knowing everything that he's been through, how hard he's worked and battled to get back, just to the point of even practicing. So to see him out there and be able to get some reps and get the standing ovation that he deserves, it was amazing to see and be a part of.
So when you look at the weapons you have on this team on offense and you look at the monsters you have on defense, I wonder about the upside. Like, how good can this team be? For example, I know you're not supposed to look at anything other than the next thing, the next game, the next practice. But does the mind ever wander? Do you ever allow yourself to think about what it might be like to play a Super Bowl at home?
Yeah, I think so, just because, everybody's bringing it up.
Right.
I think the good thing about this team is, everybody stays grounded and focused on the task at hand. So, at the same time, while, everybody's bringing up all these, scenarios and things of that nature, everybody is on the same page in the locker room and just focused on the task at hand.
Jerick McKinnon, my guest. I want to give the listeners kind of an idea about where you're from and what your background is.
Yep.
The fact that you're in the NFL and you're having the career that you're having would seem pretty remarkable. Actually, I should say it's a little surprising maybe to a number of people who saw you along the way. As an example, we go back to Marietta Middle School. You had a coach who told you and your father you were too small for football and that you'd probably get hurt. Do you remember hearing that, and what did you think at the time when you did?
I'm young, middle school. I was just shocked that, just the fact that, that's how he looked at me as one of his players. And, that's just something that I took from that day, just fuel, just adding it to the fire. And, that's why, one of the reasons why I go so hard, whether it's lifting, practicing in the game and things like that. So, it's just been a motivating factor for me.
Yeah, see, to me, that's critical. I think that at that age, if you're a kid in middle school and a coach, an authority figure like that says, hey, you know what, this might not be the best idea. You're not big enough. You're not strong enough. It's not going to work. I think a lot of young athletes might hear that and say, well, he must know. He's right. But obviously, you didn't take it like that. You used it as fuel. What made you want to stick with football?
The passion I have for the game. I played different sports growing up, but it was just something always – that just captured me in a different way about playing football. And, I probably just say, I don't know, I like the physical aspect about it. I like competing to the end. So, everything about it just drew me closer and closer.
Now, there's the football aspect, and then there's kind of like the intangible things, things that make you as good as you are. Another example, when you played high school ball at Sprayberry High School, Billy Shackelford was the coach there at the time. Mm-hmm. He said he had faster players, he had taller players, maybe guys that were more athletic, but he never had anybody who worked as hard as you did. So the football thing is one thing, but where did the drive and the work ethic come from?
Like you said, the middle school experience and, just always being – I was always one of the smaller guys on the team. I was never really that big I didn't really have a lot of muscle until I really, got to college and got on their program. So, all that stuff, I just felt like you know, like a David and Goliath. You know, I always felt like I was the underdog, and, you know, that itself just motivated me, and it made me want to be better. Every time I played football, practice, or whatever it was, dealing with football, it just made me want to be better.
Jarrett McKinnon joining us, and you and I can keep doing this. I mean, I could talk about what it was like coming out of high school, what it was like when you were recruited for colleges, what it was like when you got to the NFL. I mean, it just kept happening, and you kept proving people wrong. In fact, everything you've done in high school and then in college, where you played really, really well, then you come out for the NFL draft. And even then, there were still doubters. One article referred to you as, quote, a jack of all trades but a master of none. Is it true that you still have a screenshot of that article on your phone?
Yeah, it was my background for a good minute, but I have it on one of my phones. So, yeah, you know, it's just, you know, things like that, you know, you just look back at it. You know, I just think about, you know, how good God has been, how blessed I've been to get to this point of my career. And, you know, like I said before, it's just another one of those things that when I look at it, it motivates me even more.
You know, the reason I just keep going back to it, it's such a powerful message that it doesn't matter what people are telling you if you know differently and you're willing to pay that price. So now that you're here, right, obviously you were right, they were wrong, you made your point, you're a really nice player. I mean, are you still going to run on that kind of fuel and motivation? Or now that you've proven these people wrong, are you beyond that?
Oh, yeah, always. I'm always going to go off of that. You know, no matter, you know, how many good things happen, you know, that's one of the things that puts that chip on my shoulder. And, you know, as a player, I feel like as long as you have that chip on your shoulder, you're always going to play with that fire and that intensity. So, you know, for me, it's just about, it'll be new things that pop up along the way, but, you know, just remembering those old things and things that people said, you know, to just keep me going and going that much harder.
Jarrett McKinnon, my guest. Before you go, when you went to Georgia Southern, you played quarterback in the option for the first 3 years, and then you moved to running back. So what was that transition like to learn that position at that level?
It was different. I kind of had an idea and feel for it with playing quarterback and just knowing what everybody does. But, you know, from the physical aspect, it was a little different my first game out there. But, you know, it's all good. You know, once the pads come on, it's the same thing. You know, everybody's going to compete. So, you know, it was good to, I guess, show that versatility of my game and help my team win some ball games in college at a different position.
Jason Kidd, their head coach, is my guest. Jason, great to have you back. How are you?
Thanks, Jim, for having me back. I'm doing great. How's everything going?
Jason, great. Stuff's great. Really good to hear your voice. Thanks so much. Let me ask you about Cleveland. You beat them last night 119-116 in a game where you were up 15 in the fourth. Then they start chipping away. They get it down to 1 point before Eric Bledsoe and Giannis step up and close it out. It probably wasn't very easy to let that game almost slip away, but how pleased were you, Jason, with the way your guys responded and then the way they finished?
Well, you're talking about one of the best teams in the NBA. And they made a run, and for us being a young team, I thought we handled it well. We didn't panic. We played it to the end, and we made some plays down the stretch on both ends of the floor.
You know, Giannis said after the game, quote, "It's a big step for our team. We showed maturity. Usually in situations like that, we usually give away the game, but I think we did a great job of just staying in the game. I think we took a step forward." I mean, it is just one win, Jason, but when you feel like or when you see the way your team did respond to a team that has dominated that conference for as long as they have, do you feel like that team, your team, took a step forward?
Yeah, I think we did as a whole. We took a step forward. You're talking about playing against the best player in the world and a team that's been to the finals here the last couple of years. So just understanding they made a run, and like I agree with Giannis, sometimes those games are the ones that we kind of gift and give away. And I thought, again, we made a stand and got a stop, and then we made a couple plays on the offensive end to find a way to win.
Bucks head coach Jason Kidd, my guest. Speaking of Giannis, I had Alvin Gentry on the show last week. Jason, he said that Giannis, quote, basically has the length of Kevin Durant, but he's got shoulders like Dwight Howard, end quote. He said that on this show. Now, this league has got plenty of guys with natural ability, but where Giannis is where he is right now because of all the time and work that he's put in. How far has he come as a player in your time with him?
He's come a long ways from day one. You know, understanding, you know, I felt that he could be a guy that could handle the ball when we got here, and he wasn't quite ready for that at the time, but he continued to work on his game. And then it was a year later where we gave him the ball, and he was, you know, he was excited and ready, and he's just taken off with that He works extremely hard at his craft. He wants to be great, and he spends a lot of time in the gym on trying to be great. So we're lucky to have him.
All right, so if he's got that kind of ability and he's got that kind of desire and work ethic and grind, I mean, what's his upside? Could he be the most dominant player in the league at some point?
At some point, he can definitely be, you know, the likes of the greats, you know. And there's only, when you talk about the best to ever play, there's just a handful. And so he works extremely hard. He wants to be in that company. The sky's the limit for him. He works extremely hard. He's doing this without shooting the three, and that will come. You know, as much as we want things to happen overnight, he's worked extremely hard the last 3 to 4 years to get where he is today, and he's not going to stop working until he can become the best.
Milwaukee Bucks head coach Jason Kidd joining us. Jason, you're a very good golfer, and in fact, you've even gotten involved in the golf industry from an investment standpoint. There are a lot of things that Giannis can do on the court, but I know you've seen him at a Top Golf. How's his golf game?
He's a rookie at golf.
Okay.
but he, if he ever put his mind to it, I think he's going to be just fine. He's one that if he ever gets the bug, he'll work at it. But it's too early for him to concentrate on golf. He's got to work on basketball first.
Yeah, I love hearing guys talk about golf when that's not their main sport. I mean, you were one of the all-time best at your sport. Let me guess, you like golf because it's something you can never master. You like the way you like what it does for you mentally. What is your love of golf? What's it come down to?
I think it's all the above. I think
right.
It's something that changes on a hole to hole.
Right.
And it also, you know, you talk about being outside in some of the most beautiful places in the world. But I think just mentally challenging of being able to, beat the course. And for me, the course has won a lot more than I've beat the course. So it's just a great game. It's a great time to be out with friends and family, and you hit that one great shot that makes you feel like a pro.
God, how does that feel when you hit that one shot perfectly? For those who don't play the game, how does that feel? Can you even describe? It feels like nothing, right?
It does feel like you barely swing, and the ball just jumps off of the face of the club, and you're like, I don't think I really hit the ball that well, and it ends up right by the hole for a little tap-in birdie.
Everybody who plays the game is nodding their head right now. They know exactly what you're talking about. Now, in light of the Lakers retiring Kobe's jersey on Monday night, you said recently that Kobe Bryant is, quote, the blueprint of a winner. What did you mean by that?
Well, he's determined. When he came in, I think at 18, he had the likes of wanting, the DNA of wanting to win. And, I think that's what drove him every day is to find a way to win. Making a defensive play or making the game-winning shot, that's just what was in his blood, was being a winner. And that's what drove him every day. Besides wanting to be the best to ever play the game, he can only do that if you win, and I think he's the blueprint of winning.
Jason Kidd joins me for a few more moments. Jason, you recently had a conversation with Mark Spears of The Undefeated, and you talked about what it was like to grow up and play basketball in Oakland. You said that when you were playing, you often played with older kids and were usually picked last. Now, given the career you've had, it's hard to imagine you ever being picked last. So what were those days like in those local runs when you were the young guy coming up?
Well, it was humbling because, I mean, I was the youngest. And I had to, I was picked last. There was no doubt because the guys were a little bit older than I was. So my job was to make sure I didn't make a mistake. And the way I looked at it was as the draft happened, I wanted to be able to improve and not be picked last by the end of the summer or whatever time of the year it was, that I was hopefully in the middle. And as I got older, hopefully I was one of the top to be picked. And that's how I looked at it when I was picked last, was just don't make a mistake and get the ball to the best scorer on the team.
All right, so obviously there were some great, great players who came out of the Bay Area, especially in the backcourt. What about in those local games? Were there guys that the listeners would know of that played in the NBA that were in those runs?
Well, when you had the likes of Gary and Greg Foster, Antonio Davis, you had those type of guys that I got to go against, Brian Shaw. Being able to have pickup games against those guys. And then being in high school, being able to play against Chris Mullin and Tim Hardaway, was a lot of fun and a great lesson learned as a high school student athlete.
I mean, Dad, those are amazing names. What about, were there guys who played in those games that maybe didn't have the same opportunities that some of the guys that you mentioned, or maybe made poor choices and didn't get the opportunities? I mean, were there NBA level guys that never really got a shot?
Yeah, well, we have one that, you know, always has been talked about. Hook Mitchell was just as talented as all those names that I mentioned, and unfortunately just never got an opportunity to play at the NBA level, but had an NBA skill set that definitely could have had a lot of success.
Let me ask you about one last guy, Jason, before you go. I've done this a long, long time. You and I go way, way back, but I've interviewed thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Only a couple of times in my career have I thought to myself, man, you better be ready to talk to this guy. And I'm talking about Bill Russell. And you had an opportunity to meet Bill Russell when you were young. How did that come about? And as a young athlete, what was that like for you?
Well, at the time as a kid, sports wasn't, on the forefront. So I was more intimidated when I went over to my godfather's house, Jim Headnot. And so with that being said, there's 2 7-foot men sitting on a couch that I didn't know what they did. I knew they played basketball, but didn't know the effect of, who they were truly. And as I got older, I started to understand who Bill Russell was and who Jim Headnot was, and appreciate it, being able to have that opportunity to be around greatness. But as a kid, you just look at, I was intimidated and scared to go into that living room because of those 2 7-foot guys.
Can I tell you, as an adult, I was intimidated and scared to sit down with this guy. But like years later in 07, you wanted to get his autograph. So as an example, are you an autograph guy like as an adult? And I know that he doesn't sign them very often. So how'd you approach that?
Yeah, well, I used the proper channels to go through to ask. I knew we were going to be in Vegas for the All-Star game. And I wanted to be able to see if I could get, knowing that he doesn't sign a lot of autographs, I just wanted to see if it would be okay. And I got the green light that it would be okay. So I was very fortunate and have those 2 jerseys hanging up.
It's probably a private moment, but did you guys chop it up at all? Could you talk basketball? I'd love to know what Jason Kidd and Bill Russell talked about.
No, it was more or less thank you, and I really appreciate this. I know that you don't do this a lot, and I'm very honored that you said yes. And he was doing a photo shoot, so it was really quick.
In other words, you were not going to push your luck, in other words.
I felt like I was that little kid in the living room.
And that was back in 07. Jason Kidd joining us, Charlotte and Milwaukee on Friday night. Jason, it goes without saying, I appreciate you very much. Great to have you on the show, and thanks for being there when I needed you.
You got it, Jim. Thanks a lot for having me. Anytime.
Let's go to Richmond. Rube in Richmond. Rube, what's going on with you?
Man, smack. What's up, pimp?
What's up, Rube?
So I got a story that I am not proud of, but I know you're going on TV, so I got to get it off my chest before it's too late. About a year ago, go out to the West Coast with a couple buddies for the holidays. We're out in Oakland at a bar called The Alley, probably December 22nd, I would say. And a Uber driver drops their person off in front of the bar and gets out and is literally talking to the person as they get out of the Uber. And the noise in my ear sounded so familiar. And I said, Lawrence? And there he was, right in my face, Rome, Parody Larry. So I said, oh, God, Larry, let me buy you a drink. Coolest dude you'll ever meet, Rome. Went out, had a couple pops, out till 3 a.m. He pulled out his script at the bar and read his call at the bar that he had tried to call into your show the day before. Everyone was loving him. This is my guy. Cool. Great guy. Until the next week, every day, Rome, he'd call me. He'd text me. You got to call Rome. Got to tell him the story. Got to tell him the story. He'd text me. I'm about to do a parody. Got to tell him the story. To the point, Romy, where I love the dude, but I had to block his number. I had to block his number just like you have to block his number on the show. So, Larry, if you're out there, stop texting me. Stop calling me. I love you, my brother, but God dang. All right, Romy, I'm out.
That's an amazing story, Rube. An amazing story, and I've got so many follow-up questions that I would have asked you had you not hung up. So this guy was stalking you and calling you and hounding you and doing it every single day? Is that what you're telling me? Anyway, TV, to answer your question, what does Parody Larry mean? Parody Larry earned his gloss or his handle on this show from making telephone calls like these.
Your Super Bowl dream is no more, no more, no more, no more. Lost to the Pack and say goodbye to Romo. Oh, Rogers, oh, Rogers. Don't stop believing in Parody Lauren. He flops and he whines and he moans and he bitches. The Warriors just sent him home with some stitches. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. Our family saw a rat. Now go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Lives in the basement all alone. He waits on hold with his flip phone. His slow-mo voice, it makes us groan.
That's not a new call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Hey, TV, does that answer your question? That's what Parody Larry means. Parody Larry is a guy that started to call this show, and I never encouraged it, and he would just do parodies. He would take popular songs and try and cram them or slam them into some take about a jungle caller or some sports take. Parody Larry, he does parodies. He does terrible parodies. They suck. They're terrible parodies, and he always gets run. They always end up just like those five. And he's got a whole catalog. He's like Michael Jackson for parodies. Like Michael Jackson bought the Beatles catalog. Larry's hoping to sell his catalog of horrible parodies to somebody. We go now to Larry, who coincidentally is on the phone. What a coinky dink. There's Parody Larry. Damn, Lawrence, you've really shaken things up today. What's up with you? What do you have to say for yourself, Larry? Not as good as I was before the show started. Larry, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. Is this true? Well, I know it's true, Larry. Are you stalking Rube?
No, I am not stalking Rube. I will admit I did meet both of those guys, Rube and Roland, at this bar, and they are both nice guys, and they did buy me drinks, but, you know, Rube had to stand on a telephone book just to get over the bar when he bought them for me, and the guy took so many selfies, I thought he almost wanted to have S with me. So he's a good guy, but I did email him and tweet him a little bit.
How many times? Larry, define a little bit. How many times did you email and tweet him?
Okay, after I a lot. The next define, week probably was
define,
for the guy.
Define a lot. And why are you doing that, man? Why would you do that?
Because I was a little toasty at the bar, and the guy said he was going to actually email in, and his emails usually are terrible, but, you know, he said he was going to give me props. So I kept saying, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? It's about a year and a half later now, and he finally did it. So I guess he woke up.
Yeah, wait, how many? Were you hassling him for the entire year and a half? I think he didn't do it because he wanted to do it. I think he did it so you just leave the guy alone.
Well, you know, I can understand that point. You know, Jim, I do have a bad habit of tweeting fools at ungodly hours of the night. But the thing is they answer me back. It's like 1 a.m, even Tether in Green Bay and Sarah T in Providence reply to me, and they're still wide awake. It's 3 hours later, Jim.
Larry, what are the replies? Are the replies, leave me alone, creep? I mean, what are they saying to you?
No, they don't leave me alone. They're like, oh, this is what I'm going to do on the ATP tomorrow. And Tether says stuff like, oh, you're going to be on the Woodscope. I'm having a drink, team bake. I mean, it just goes on and on. So they're harassing me just like I'm doing to them.
Oh. Oh, so they're harassing you. All right, I got that. All right, Lawrence, so you can't not end the year without a parody, right? You are Parody Lawrence.
This is true, and I try and do it well. So, Jim, listen, it's the season of giving, and, you know, you like to give to a lot of worthy causes. And the clones don't know that one of your favorite callers with incredible musical talent from Arkansas has actually taken up one of your causes to raise money and champion the youth of America. So, John, this one's for you. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. John in Little Rock has a little cockfighting foundation.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
I feel badly for you, Lawrence. You thought that was your crowning moment. You thought that was your crowning moment and the greatest moment you've ever had. Nobody heard it, Lawrence. I hammered that dump button. Jamie Dixon is my guest. Jamie, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Good, Jim. How are you doing?
Jamie, I'm doing great. It's good to get caught up with you. I've got to ask you about where your team is at right now. You beat Texas Southern 91-72 Monday night. You continue your undefeated start. You run the program's winning streak to 16, which is the longest in the country. I know it's early, but 11 games in, how do you like where your team is right now?
like where we're at offensively. We've been very good. We shoot it well. We score inside, and we've got some guys can put the ball on the floor. So we're pretty balanced. Defensively, getting a little better, but you know our league's a big step up, and we've played some good teams, but no Kentuckys or Dukes on the non-conference. They weren't calling, but we played a good, solid schedule, and obviously we're going to play some good teams coming up as soon as we get in the conference. We open with Oklahoma on the 30th, but obviously William & Mary before then, as you mentioned.
All right, it's Jamie Dixon, my guest. In fact, talking about the conference, I had Bob Huggins on yesterday, and we were talking about just how tough that conference is physically and mentally. What was your first season in the conference like?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'd been in the Big East when it was at its best, and in the ACC when it was at its best after adding Syracuse, Louisville, and of course Pitt. So I've seen pretty much the toughest conference every year I've been doing this thing, and I think we took it as far as top to bottom. Big 12, there was really no bad team. If you can imagine Oklahoma and Texas coming in ninth and tenth last and next to last year, with Lon Kruger and Shaka Smart and as the coaches. I mean, I think it's top to bottom. I don't know that we had the two teams or three teams maybe as good as maybe the ACC, but certainly if you're looking at it. And then the Round Robin, the two teams, the home and homes, playing everybody twice, it just makes for a gauntlet that's like nothing I've ever seen. So it's tough, and the toughest 18-game schedule I've been a part of.
I mean, Jim, that's a joke, right? Lon Kruger and Shaka Smart at the bottom of the conference. I mean, it's got to be a joke, right?
Yeah, no, I mean that's where they are, and that's how somebody good is going to finish last this year, and I'm hoping it's not us.
You know, Jamie Dixon, my guest, I could talk to you about a number of your guys, but I want to ask you about one guy in particular, Desmond Bane. He had 9 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 assists in the win over Texas Southern. Over the summer, he spent some time at the USA Basketball U19 training camp, and as he said, not much more than a year before that, he was talking to NAIA and Division II schools. So how far has his game come from the first time you saw him?
You know, I mean, you always talk to kids about getting better and you want your guys to improve, and that's what we do it for. For me, that's the important thing. But he's, you know, you hate to set limits, but he's surpassed where I thought he could be even at this point. And the USA Basketball, as you mentioned, Jim, was huge for him because he was totally the only guy that nobody had heard of, you know, at a high school that was there, and everybody said he could have made the team, should have made the team, you know, but. You know, he was the guy that was not the five-star guy, that wasn't the top 25 guy, and he played as good as anybody, and now he's taking it up a notch because I think the confidence and even the chip on the shoulder at the same time is a nice combination for him. But a great kid. He shoots it like no other, but he can score on the basket, and we've talked about him rebounding and getting better there, and so he goes and gets 10 the other night, so... he's just a great kid and a great player, and Ryan Miller, my assistant, found him and recruited him, and we're very, very lucky to have him.
Jamie Dixon joins us. And Jamie, you're never going to make it about yourself, but when you see the season ticket numbers rising, you see your team in the top 15, you see the buzz around the program growing. Look, I would love to talk to you about the Gauchos all day long, but the fact is you're a TCU alum. How much pride does all of that give you as a TCU alum?
It does. I mean, obviously, that's why I came here, and it gave me a chance at a high school, and gave me a scholarship. And when people, I was kind of Desmond Bane as far as under recruited, but it means a lot. Obviously, this place hasn't had great history in basketball, and I took it on as a challenge and left a great place to take on a challenge that maybe some question, but we're excited. I think we have everything in place to be really good, and we're sold out, and you know, things are going very well. We've got a really good group, a great recruiting class coming in next year, and we're excited about it. The Gauchos are better too, though, this year, so we've been watching them.
Good. I'm glad you're checking on them too. Listen, as a follow-up before you go, I mean, when you arrived, you were taking over a program that had not been to the NCAA tournament this century, but you said that when you got there, you saw the future. There has to be more to it than just wanting to come home and going to a place where you got your start.
Yeah.
What was the future that you saw when you took over?
I felt that there were some good players here, and they just maybe one guy was hurt, one guy was sitting out. And I mean, Coach Johnson had recruited some good guys and just had some tough breaks and injuries. And I looked at it as a startup rather than a rebuild, because they'd never had the new arena. They'd never been in the Big 12. They'd never had the commitment from the chancellor and the athletic director that is necessary to be in the to be a top 20 program. And I think I just happened to be the guy that came in at the right place and the right time, hired the right guys. And some of that can be lucky too. But then we got three really good players late, and Desmond was one of them. Jalen Fisher was the other one, and Kawhi Noy was the other one. And so we got three really good players late in the spring, and that really is a hard thing to do. So that got us jump started and obviously the momentum going into the year.
So then humor me one thing. When you were at UCSB and you're a young guy and Ben Howland's on that staff and you're on that staff, and UCSB is just, it's a great, great place, Jamie, as you know, but not exactly a basketball hotbed. Did you, when you were on that staff, did you think this is just my start and one of the places I'll be and these are the guys I work with? Or could you and Ben Howland sit down and think, you know, we're going to be Coach of the Year candidates or winners, Final Four coaches? Did you know it was that special?
No, I mean, right. You know, it was at the heyday of Thunderdome, and to be there and make sure I got the coffee orders right in the morning. You know, that was my job. I was the GA, the graduate assistant, just trying to learn from Ben and Coach Pym, and we had Ray Lopes and Bobby Castagna. He had a great staff, and I just was lucky to be there and be at a great school. And I start out as my first coaching job, really. And I didn't know. I just wanted to be maybe a junior college coach in California. That was my goal going into it, and just kind of took me on a different path. But Santa Barbara is where I got my first shot in coaching, so it's special to me.
Romy Rome, how you doing?
Bro, tell me about the Scope. Like, I know about the Scope. I talked about the Scope. You are the host of your own Scope. Tell me all about it.
Yeah, it just kind of happened on accident, where we just, at a campfire one night, we decided to do a Scope, me and my twin brother, 512 Lumber, and we decided to start calling clones, and it just blew up. So next week, we did it again. You named the clone. We've had them on.
Like who? Well, give me, for those who don't know, who's calling the show? Who have you interviewed? And what's the show about? What do you guys do exactly?
Some of the bigger names, the Silk Bra, we had Trapper, we had Terrence, we had...
Terrence? Did you say you had Terrence?
Mike. Terrence was on, yeah.
All right, bro, so if I couldn't find Terrence for 10 years, how did you find him?
I had a connection in Dick Flowers.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, he helped me out. He is my connection. Yeah, he was really awesome.
All right, so let me ask you this. As a host of a show, Wood, let me ask you something. I'm going to ask you what I get all the time. Who's your favorite guest, 12 Wood?
Who is my Trapper by far?
Really?
Trapper was the type of guy I said, hi, Trapper, and then he talked for an hour. It was great.
Isn't that great as a host? You don't have to do anything at all.
No, yeah. He sat there. He talked about his history. If you're looking for a good podcast interview, Trapper would be a good one. But this Friday we have Chris Nolander, St. Pete. We have Golden Bait Warrior. We have Pauly T. We have maybe Callum Vegas. And Rich and Top is right here.
Hey, bro, you know what the thing is? Here's the thing. When you're you and you've got the best of the best, there is this challenge to keep raising the bar, right? So when you've already done 10 or 12 of the best clones, where do you go from there? You don't want to drop that bar. You don't want to start getting C-level clones.
Well, what are you doing? I mean, Friday night, so we could do like Jim Rome on the show.
You know, like I said, I've got a family party, so it's going to be hard for me to break away from the fam. You know, if I say to Janet, hey, listen, I really don't want to disrespect your family or our family, but I got to go lob a phone call to 12 Wood, she may or may not understand that. Actually, knowing Janet, she probably would understand that. I'm going to say it's a coin flipper. I might get there. What time does your show air?
Your time would be 7 o'clock, so 9 o'clock Central Standard Time, 7 o'clock California time.
I would never be far enough in the bag by then to do that, but maybe. That's it for now. Thank you very much for checking out Keegan-Michael Key on the Jim Rome Podcast, Episode 18. I appreciate the amazing reaction to that. One more, and then the year in review. Finish 27 like a boss. Finish 2017 like a boss. Thank you very much for listening and all the support. See you next time. I'm out.